You are now listening to Conversations with Congressman King. Discussion on issues that impact your life with your representative from Iowa's 5th District.
Welcome to Conversations with Congressman King, and each week we bring you a great guest. I think that bluegrass music they play in Virginia, don't they, Bob Goodlatte?
Virginia is the home of bluegrass music, and I'm delighted to hear it and delighted to be with you, Steve.
And I'm very glad to introduce Bob Goodlatte from the 6th District of Virginia, who has served as 4 years as a chairman of the House Ag Committee. And we worked together so closely and traveled a lot of the places in the country and actually places in the world over the last 4 years, and also served together on the Judiciary Committee. And if there's anything that matters to Iowans, it's agriculture, and if there's anything that impacts all Americans, it's Judiciary Committee issues. Bob Goodlatte has been in front and center on those issues every day that I've been in this Congress, and I'm really glad to have you here and a chance to draw some of that wisdom out and share it with Midwesterners, Bob.
Well, thanks, Steve. I'm delighted to be with you and delighted to have an opportunity to talk about some of these issues that I know are very important to folks in Iowa, as they are to folks in Virginia, and we're heading into some very serious issues in relation to the Farm Bill and the budget and some other things as well.
And I want to thank you right off the bat for the preliminary work that you made sure got done on the upcoming Farm Bill, what some will call the Food Security Act. And actually, technically, we should call it that. But we know what we're referring to when we say Farm Bill. And you held last year in 2006 at least 11 hearings all around the country to get us ready to write this Farm Bill here in 2007. I remember places like New York, Indiana, North Carolina, Alabama, California, Texas, Nebraska, had a subcommittee hearing in Iowa. I missed a few. Virginia would be one. That was an ambitious agenda that you laid out for the committee, and I'm hopeful that it'll be fruitful as we go forward.
Well, we did. We got to about 20 states for full committee and subcommittee hearings, and you were great, one of the best participants to get to as many as you did. And it's important for members to hear the diverse array of American agricultural production. Not only the fact that we produce 650 different commercially viable agricultural products, but we produce them in different ways in different states, and it creates for a complicated process to write a farm bill. And so we try to listen to farmers and ranchers across the country, and I'm glad that you took the time to do that. And I know you do that on a weekly basis with your own constituents back home. You have an outstanding track record of standing up for farmers and ranchers and all of your constituents in Iowa, and I have a lot of respect for you, and I've gotten to know you very well because of your service on both the Judiciary and the Agriculture Committees, which I think are the two most important committees in the Congress.
As do I, Bob, and I thank you very much for that, but your leadership has been what has helped me be able to be those places and see and do those things. And I look at the contrast across the country from hearings in New York to hearings in California, for example. And also, I reflect upon a book that I observed in your office one day. And we have a lot of good, proud cattlemen in the Midwest, of course. But I don't think they're aware of the book that's titled, I'm going to ask you to volunteer that title, about Virginia, the Virginia cattle industry.
Yeah, 400 years of the Virginia cattle industry. And we go right back to Jamestown. We're celebrating our 400th anniversary this year, and cattle were brought over almost immediately and have been raised in Virginia for a long time. I represent the Shenandoah Valley, which is a beautiful area. At one time, it was known as the breadbasket of the Confederacy. They grew a lot of wheat and other things, but and Cyrus McCormick invented the reaper in my congressional district, but then he, like a lot of other folks, took the advice to head west, where the land is flatter and not as rocky, and the fertile fields of Iowa and some of the surrounding states took over the production of major grains, and so we converted to becoming a livestock-based agricultural community, and we are one of the largest producers of poultry in Virginia. My district has both chickens and turkeys, and we have very large production there. And also, we have a lot of beef cattle, dairy, and that's what we deal with now. And of course, we're facing some serious concerns because while Iowa has had some great boosts from ethanol production, and we want to see that continue, it has meant higher grain prices, feed prices for your hog farmers and my cattle and poultry guys, and they are obviously very interested in what can be done to deal with that.
And that will be one of the subjects that we wrestle with. We're here with Bob Goodlatte, the ranking member of the House Ag Committee, and served 4 years as the chairman from Virginia's 6th Congressional District. And this is Congressman Steve King on Conversations with Congressman King. We are shaping this farm bill as it comes forward, and you've raised an issue that is a critical focus. I know we had a hearing a couple of weeks ago at least, on the pressure on the livestock industry because our grains are going to renewable fuels, and I'm one of the people that has taken the position that says we've been trying to raise our commodity prices all my life. Now they're getting there. Now the consequences from that are materializing, and it's going to be a little difficult to walk that tightrope between growing the livestock industry and being able to also supply the renewable fuels at the same time, at least until we emerge to the other side into the cellulosic, provided that materializes.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. In the near term, it is going to be difficult, and I'm hoping that farmers will find a way to pass those costs through so that we can continue to have a vibrant livestock industry. Americans like to eat beef and pork and poultry and other meat products, and we want to make sure that we continue to make that available to them in an affordable way. But by the same token, if the feed costs coming in do keep rising, then the cost has to be passed on. So that's a concern, but it's also something that may help to handle it in the near term. Over the longer term, unless we find a way to produce ethanol from things that are more efficient than corn and soybeans, I think we're going to have a serious problem with food prices in the country for consumers as well as for livestock producers. So the initiative in this farm bill will be to find ways to encourage bringing an opportunity to Midwestern grain farmers to grow a crop that is even more efficient than corn in terms of producing ethanol. And that may be switchgrass, it may be some other native grass to the Great Plains, but it is probably something other than corn. And once you can break down the entire plant, the cellulose, the basic building block of plant life, once you can do that, the estimates are you can produce 4 or 5 times as many gallons per acre than you are producing today. Also, I think we need to review our conservation programs and make sure that we are only protecting truly environmentally sensitive areas and that we encourage as much corn and soybean and other grain production as possible. I'm seeing vastly increased projections of acreage this year, and I hope that will continue, and I hope that Iowans to take advantage of these high prices and put as many acres into planting as possible.
Well, and it looks to me, Bob Goodlatte, like we are seeing some shift from soybeans to corn in the Midwest because of the economics that are part of it. Some acres that will be opened up, not perhaps as dramatic as the livestock industry would like to see, but we're also seeing improvements in production based upon genetics that we've looked back historically were 1 to 2% a year, now are projected to be 3 to 4% increase a year. All those things comport pretty well for a strong ag industry for a long time to come.
I think you're right, and I've been very appreciative of your strong support for the use of technology in helping farmers stay competitive in a very competitive international environment, and all forms of technology, including biotechnology, play critical roles in that. And so we've been battling with the Europeans and others, and you've been a stalwart on that and making sure that we use sound science when we apply tests to whether or not food that contains biotech seeds is indeed safe. And the evidence is overwhelmingly that it is perfectly safe. No one has been able to find any distinction between genetically modified grains and the traditional grains, which are in fact modified in and of themselves, just based upon different hybridized processes over many, many centuries, as a matter of fact. We're just using a new method to do something we've been doing for a long time.
Yeah, beyond being genetically modified, they can't point to a genetic difference between a naturally modified often and a laboratory modified. If they can't point to that, but they want to point to it as a food risk. I think the Europeans have to make that case, not Americans. And you've made it powerfully at the European Union. And that was a fantastic educational experience for me to go with you in that trip and to Brussels, sit down individually with some of the representatives of the European Union, then sit down at the round table at the European Union. And one of the things for me that was a mitigating factor was that even the French are debating us in English there at the round table in Brussels. And Bob Goodlatte, I appreciate that. If I could also, you're listening to Conversations with Congressman King, and we're here with Bob Goodlatte of Virginia's 6th District and the ranking member of the House Ag Committee and a subcommittee chairman on the Judiciary Committee and a colleague of mine. Often when we go to committee, I look over and see Bob Goodlatte there leading the charge and supporting also a good cause. One of the subjects that's ahead of us is we both sit on the Immigration Subcommittee, and we're watching now as a bill has been introduced on the House side by Flake Gutierrez, by the effort by Senator Kennedy on the other side. We don't know what's going to emerge there. We know John McCain has pulled out of those discussions and negotiations. There's another effort between the White House and Senate Republicans to draft a bill, and the future and the destiny of America hangs in the balance. What are your thoughts on the overall guidelines that we should be following?
Well, there's one, I think, overriding principle. You know, we're a nation of immigrants. There's probably not a person listening to the program today who can't go back a few generations or several generations and find somebody who came here from somewhere else in the world because America is the land of opportunity. It's still the land of opportunity, and we're grateful for that. But we're also a nation of laws, and our success is founded on the fact that we have learned to live in a free society with respect for the laws of the land. And when we have unsecure borders, when we have people entering this country on student visas, visitor visas, business visas, and overstaying their visas. So it's not just a problem at the border. It's also enforcement of these laws as we move forward. If we don't do that, I think that our economy is ultimately imperiled by this. The budget will be busted by this. The projections of the amount of taxpayer resources that have to be paid for people, the vast majority of whom are not even high school educated, is a grave concern in terms of what we're doing to the long-term effect of our economy. I recognize, particularly in farm country, that there are shortages of workers. And to have a real guest worker program that is based upon not this adverse effect wage rate, but a real prevailing wage rate to allow people to have the opportunity to come in, do temporary work, and then go back to their own country is something that I am perfectly supportive of. And I think many, many migrant workers would like to have that. They would be able to be where their extended family is. They would be able to be where their language is, where the cost of living may well be lower, and they would like to have the opportunity to go back and forth. But because of the current environment with illegal immigration, they come here and they stay, and that is not a good situation for our economy. It's not a good situation for our national security, and it's not a good situation for what I think is the most important issue, and that is respect for the rule of law. If you're willing to disobey one law, you're likely to disobey a lot of other laws as well.
You know, and I appreciate you making that point, Bob Goodlatte, because the centerpiece of this is the rule of law. And it is one of the pillars that has been the foundation for American exceptionalism. We have laws here. We respect property rights. We have individual rights that are guaranteed in the Constitution. And if we bring in and we reward people who have contempt for the rule of law, it breaks down our whole system. And you pointed out something else that I think is very instructive. That is the cost to society by people that aren't pulling their own load here and can't because of their education dropouts, for example. And there's a recent study done by Robert Rector of the Heritage Foundation that demonstrates that the net cost to a head of household, a family that has a head of household who is a high school dropout, whatever their immigration status is $22,449 per year to the taxpayer. If we persist down this path of tens of millions as the Senate's moving, it simply collapses the middle class.
I think it is a great threat to the middle class. I think it is a great threat to undercutting the wage rates of working Americans, And we need to address that first and foremost as we address immigration. There are a lot of things with regard to legal immigration that need to be reformed, but enforcing our current laws and enhancing our security at the border and the internal enforcement in the country is vitally important. I support giving local law enforcement the opportunity, mm-hmm. when they find somebody, not just who's committed a crime, but if they find somebody who's illegally in the country, they should be able to directly turn them over to the Immigration Service and expect that they will then be deported from the country. And if we would get back to enforcing our laws, this problem wasn't created overnight and it won't be solved overnight, but if we would get back to enforcing our laws, we would find the solution and at the same time find the agricultural workers that we need. And I'm introducing legislation this week, as a matter of fact, to have a real guest worker program without this adverse effect wage rate, without any form of amnesty, and without having a situation where, as the Ag Jobs Bill, which is promoted by others, does, would open our federal courts to a floodgate of litigation brought by legal aid societies against farmers based on what they're doing with people who are illegally in the country in the first place. They shouldn't have access to our courts.
Well, Bob Goodlatte, you've always brought a good thought process to and a real good analysis to and well-reasoned from a legal and a human perspective to everything you've done. And I thank you so much for coming on board Conversations with Congressman King.
Well, thanks, Steve. It's been a pleasure.
Please join us next time on Conversations with Congressman King. For more information on any of the topics mentioned today, visit the website at house.gov/Steve King.